Hey guys, I'm your host Loic Mayor, a Swiss alpine skier, and welcome to another episode of Behind an Alpine Skier podcast. So today is actually a special episode. We are here in Sasfe, and I'm very happy to make that episode with Victor Wiazek from the United States. Actually, he's from Poland but living in America, and he actually has quite a special background. To give you an idea, he had a life-threatening accident on the skis a few years ago, and so since that day he dedicated himself to make the sport safer and help everyone stay healthy. So welcome Victor for this show, actually the first guest outside of the World Cup.
Indeed, pleasure, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So actually, well, you contacted me after my cut in Japan, I think it started like that.
Yes, so I don't think I've actually told you this, but I'm pretty sure I made my Instagram account in order to contact you. So previously, I think I'd been off of Instagram for 5 years just because of the, you know, who I am. I know I get carried away with that kind of stuff. So I heard about your cut. I was thinking of the best ways to get in contact with you. I asked some of my friends, you know, nobody had your contact. So I saw that you were pretty active on Instagram with your photography and whatnot. So I ended up making an Instagram account. I think 2 days later, I put up my first post, and it's still my only post to this day.
I saw that.
and sent you a message, kind of, you know, giving you way too long of an overview of, you know, my story, my background. And I was surprised to get any sort of response. But, you know, I found that you were very responsive. You were very interested in the topic because, you know, obviously you just cut yourself, I think it was just a few days, if not weeks before. And you actually ended up sending me the video, which I found a little difficult to watch, as well as the pictures, which were no easier. But that's how we met.
Yeah, and actually it was just a few days before, like 4 days before that I cut myself. And then I had a lot of time, so I went, you know, I don't always go in the invitations on the messages. Mm. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting there. And then you actually captured my attention.
Oh, I'm glad I could.
So, to give you a little background, you were an alpine ski racer.
Correct. Went to GMVS in northern Vermont.
And then you had a pretty bad injury, and that's how it all started.
Yeah, so I actually had two real cuts, as I'd call them. Okay. The first one I had in 2014 in Vail, it was actually a cut that I didn't even feel throughout the entire day. So I must have had it in the morning. I know exactly when I fell. And I know I hit my ski, but it felt like a bruise. So I was skiing around. And it felt, I don't know what it felt like exactly. It felt a little warmer. I thought there was just some, you know, bruised kind of blood kind of under the skin, warming it up there. And I got back to our hotel at the end of the day, took my suit off, and it was soaked all the way down to the top of my boot. That was the day that we were supposed to be leaving. So Mike Day was my coach at the time. He took me down to the Vail clinic, and, you know, they stitched me up. I think it was just like, you know, 15 or so stitches. And they put me in the plane a few hours later, and I was on snow, I think, 7 days after that. So I pretty much forgot all about that crash.
Yeah.
Fast forward, I think, 5 years to February of 2019. And it was the third, I remember, definitely the scariest day of my life. But this was, I was just telling you, I mean, I'm someone who's known more for my crazy crashes than my crazy speed. And this was one of the lamest crashes I've ever had. It was on some flats at a little hill called West Mountain. And, I just kind of got a little low in the turn, a little inside. Ski just kind of came right off, slid ahead of me, and kind of perched itself on the side. And I was coming up onto it with, I don't know in kilometers per hour, but no more than 20 miles per hour in speed. And kind of just, it was very slow motion. I kind of just fell right onto it. And I told you as well, but I thought I hit my head. I thought I had a really bad concussion because my field of vision was just covered in red. Pretty quickly figured out that was because there was blood that squirted onto my face and everywhere. But that was not a concussion. I, in fact, had actually cut my leg all the way down the femur. So I was very, very lucky to have people right next to me in a matter of, maybe 2, maybe 3 minutes. I got three or four, I still don't know exactly, but 3 to 4 tourniquets on my leg right away. And that was still not quite enough to stop the bleeding. And, long story short, what ended up happening is I lost over half my blood. I almost died on the hill, then I almost died in the hospital. I was very, very fortunate to have everything turned out pretty much exactly the way it did. I mean, I kind of relived the moment so many times in my head, as you might imagine. And if there was one thing that went any differently, I mean, I don't think I'd have the great fortune of sitting with you here in beautiful Sauce Fay for this first time in my life. So,
yeah, actually, to give you a little picture about it, I left my cut straight away. I saw it. I had to make a garrow under the knee. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, that was a pretty big cut. But I was like, all right, maybe I might ski in a few days. And then when you contacted me and sent me the picture of your cut, that's when I realized actually mine was nothing. Mm. Like my cut was nothing compared to yours. And when my coaches were like, how is it going? How was the cut? Because I had bandage and stitches, and so they didn't really see it.
Yeah.
I was like, it's nothing. I've seen way worse.
So, did you have any pain though? Initially?
No, when I cut myself, I felt it straight away, mm-hmm. but I didn't have any pain. Like, I just felt it. And then I had to ski 15 minutes powder to get down to the taxi, and then 10 minutes taxi. And I was with Tongin F. Uh-huh. And he was like, I don't want to see. Just tell me if your head is turning or if you feel bad, because that means you're losing too much blood.
Yeah.
And then while skiing down, I was feeling more like burning inside. Not pain, but burning. Just a burn.
In that like localized in the area, yeah. I see.
And then middle of the forest, suddenly I was feeling a little bit like I was less tight in my shoe, in my boot. Mm. I was like, I'll open the buckles, see if it helps. And then I started feeling that I had blood under the feet, so I was starting to glide.
Yikes.
A little bit. And then, yeah, fast forward to the hospital and did surgery straight away. But, I mean, I was pretty lucky to not touch anything and to be able to ski 12 days after in World Cup again.
Which is insane to me.
It was a little bit painful, but it was... that's how it is, I think. You, as a skier, you get some injuries, but you start to... Actually, you just see a goal. Mm-hmm. Like me, that was my goal, to ski back in Interstoder 12 days after. And
that was your goal from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You cut yourself
I knew
badly.
I wanted to ski the first weekend first, but I was like, might be impossible. But I'll give myself a chance, even if it's a 2% chance.
Yeah.
But my goal is to be at the start for the GS in 12 days. And so I did everything I could to get there. And then, I don't know, like, you were telling me that you were afraid to come back on the skis. But me, I was just afraid of it opening again. Mm. And seeing it open again. Because that's what I was most afraid of. Not from anything else. Not from falling, not from cutting myself. Mm. But... when you told me you were afraid, and it made sense actually to me that it could happen.
I see.
Like it all made sense. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. That when you have a life-threatening accident, it can actually make you a little bit worried about next time.
Yeah.
And that's why you started that company, I think. Huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let me first touch on something that you addressed here, because we mentioned this a few times. Can we curse on this show?
Yeah.
Can we curse? I was just going to say, I mean, ski racers are fucking crazy. And you're a prime example of that. I mean, you got hurt, and your first thought was, all right, my goal is to go skiing this weekend. I'm in the middle of the forest in Japan, free skiing.
Oh, ole.
Free skiing is, you know, the fact that you're free skiing alone is kind of crazy to me. Most of these accidents that I've seen
happen.
No,
we were with Tongi, so luckily we're two, but...
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. But the fact that it wasn't with race skis, you know, you people mostly associate this with racing.
Yeah.
Because you've got razors on your feet.
And exactly.
I mean, I'm sure you did too. But in any case, I mean, it's insane to me. I think this is a big part of the reason why you don't hear about these accidents as much as you would otherwise. And again, I know we've had this discussion, but with ACLs, for instance, I don't know a single person who's died from an ACL, a torn ACL. No. But with every ski racer you talk to, whether it's, you know, a 13-year-old at a ski academy or guys at your level, that's the worst nightmare right there, because you lose several months, if not over a year, from your season, right? And when it comes to these accidents, what happens is, you know, either you come close to death or you are back on snow within a week, which is what happened to me the first time. I mean, there's really, really no in between. So, again, I told you, I totally forgot about my accident that happened in Vail. I had a few people telling me right before my big accident happened that I should wear... you know, those the pock cut resistant leggings were just coming out at the time, and I told them, you know, I'd already gotten cut once, like there's no way in hell that this is going to happen to me again. And, you know, there's no chance I'm shelling out $250, I think it was at the time, for a pair of leggings. I mean, it's kind of ironic when you consider that, as you alluded to, now I'm making leggings for 50% more than that. But it's crazy. It's crazy how we don't, as ski racers, and I think this you could speak to this more than I can, but we don't really pay as much attention to injuries based off of how dangerous or potentially lethal they are, but more so how dangerous they are to our careers, our seasons, yeah. How much time they take out of, you know, our days on snow.
Yeah, because I think our career is so short, like at 35, 36, some people go up to 40, but I mean, the majority between 30 and 35, they will stop. And so you feel like if you lose a year or 9 months because of an ACL, you lose a year on a maybe 10, 15 years career max.
Yeah.
And so in our mind, it's more, you lose more out of that than of a cut. But at the end, what's important is your health.
Yeah.
And that's what we have sometimes to remind ourselves, or everyone, I think, sometimes has to remind every sport people, athletes in general. You need to remind yourself sometimes, okay, my body is my tool and I need to take care of it.
Yeah.
And it's when it happens to you with a cut or to someone close to you that you start realizing the danger of it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I completely agree. And it makes sense. But at the same time, I honestly don't think that that is a compelling enough argument for most racers. If you tell most racers, like, you can die, like, there's a good chance that you'll die, for whatever reason, you know, that doesn't, like, get into our heads as much as, you know, if you tell them, you know, there's a 10% chance that this season you might lose 2 months from your season.
Yeah.
Because it's not only the time off snow, there's the recovery period, all this and that. But, I mean, it's crazy to me. It's really, really interesting having conversations with people on this topic. And, you know, I kind of initially approached this as something that it's insane that this happened to me more than once even. But in fact, I mean, I spoke to Bodhi, it happened to him more than 60 times, 14 of which required, more intense medical intervention. I was shitting myself after the one time it happened. I can't imagine. Obviously he's extreme in every regard. Yeah. But
I have the picture of Bodhi Miller cutting himself in Vail, in Beaver Creek, I think. Yes. It was the World Champs.
2015, February, I believe. I think that was the last race of his career.
I remember my coach is asking, is it like that? And I was like, no, mine is way bigger than that. That's nothing compared to that. Look at me like, ah, okay. And then I was asking, you want to see the picture? Not sure, but okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, he told me as well that was nothing for him either. You could see in the video.
No, because it's like, for us, it's just, something like that, a small cut, you have a few stitches, you're not going to die from it.
Yeah.
But because we don't think further that if it's deeper, if it's the wrong place, you can die from it.
Absolutely.
And as you said, it's only when you start asking questions around that you realize that so many people had a cut in their career.
Absolutely.
So many athletes. But to come back to the point, nobody thinks about it. And that's something I think we have to slowly realize and try to improve it. And that's why I wear your protection now.
Yeah.
Every day. Because I'm like, since I'm skiing every day with sharp edges, sharper than a knife, a kitchen knife, then why take the chance of having a health problem?
Yeah.
It's better to wear one more protection, and actually it's like a back protector.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't wear it, you feel like, oh, it's going to annoy me. It's going to be bothering me, you know, in the movement, or it's going to be too tight, or I don't know what. And after 2 days, you don't feel it anymore.
Right.
It's just part of your body. Yeah. It's part of what you have to wear to ski. And me doesn't give me more confidence on the skis, but I just know that, okay, I put myself in a good position, so if I fall, I might avoid some problems later.
Right. Do you feel like it gives you peace of mind on the hill at all, or isn't it just not something that really enters in your mind?
No, it doesn't enter my mind.
Okay.
No. It doesn't give me more confidence or more safety or anything. It's just, I know at least I can't cut my legs.
Yeah.
And that's what's important.
Right.
I know that I can fall on my ski. I won't die there on the glacier.
Yeah. Hopefully. I mean,
you can always have it on your upper body or somewhere.
Absolutely.
But theoretically, on the legs, I should avoid it.
Absolutely.
And that's the part of the body where it should happen.
Certainly, certainly. I mean, that's where it happens that most severely, most cases. And I mean, we were just speaking with Marco. He brought up the fact that, or one of your other teammates, I can't recall right now, but we started talking about carb resistance. And to your point about these cases that you don't hear about until you start speaking about it, I mean, apparently your coach just had a huge cut on the back of your leg. I mean, I've got to talk to him about that. Because that's
I have to ask him as well tonight.
That's crazy. You know, I know exactly, when I speak to someone in the ski racing world, I know exactly how many ACLs they've torn, how many spinal discs they've herniated, but you don't really hear about these things. And I mean, as a result of doing what I've been doing, I recently heard about a 9-year-old that cut her neck almost, her cheek down her neck.
Wow.
There was a 13-year-old, I think, last season, whose parents I've been in touch with quite a bit, who helped me develop the leggings that we're talking about, who's still trying to, you know, get back into sport, into, I think he just started biking recently, and this happened over a year ago, if I'm not mistaken. But you speak to anybody on this topic, and you'll hear at least one or two pretty crazy stories.
And some people like can't use their feet correctly anymore, can't use a muscle anymore. Yeah. And so for example, I was very fortunate to get everything back.
Mm.
I have some sensation problems. I don't feel anything. I have some water coming in the leg for now. But other than that, I can use my muscle.
Mm.
I can jump. I can do everything as normal.
Definitely.
Without any pain. And for that, I'm super lucky.
Absolutely.
Because when I think about the people that, they can't really control their feet anymore, or you lose a little bit of balance, or you can't gain all the strength back, that can be pretty annoying in life in general.
Yeah.
Not just as a racer, more life living, I would say, living normally.
Yeah, annoying, I think, is quite an understatement. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I told you this, I'm extremely lucky. You call yourself lucky. I'm extremely fortunate that when I was on the hill, I was pretty optimistic from the start when I first had my accident. You know, I've gotten hurt plenty of times. I haven't had a injury-free season up until this one, actually, this year, since I was 14 years old. So it was a pretty big move for me. But I on the hill, I heard the ski patrollers over talking that they didn't think I was going to survive. Then in the hospital, the doctor was telling me, telling my father, who was right, you know, standing over me, that I wasn't going to walk again. Then I started walking. I was told that I wasn't going to ski again. And I mean, thankfully, I can do all those things. I do have some limitations when it comes to balance. You know, when I'm on the hill, I do have some troubles, but nothing debilitating, I wouldn't say. But there are other people who are just not nearly as lucky in that regard.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No, continue. Continue.
Oh, and kind of circling back to the beginning of this conversation. So the reason I reached out to you was because, I mean, despite what little this injury kind of took away from me, I think it's actually very fortunate that it happened to me, because it's got kind of given me this meaning in my life that I think I was actually looking for at the time. Like, I don't, you know, I've never believed in the hippy dippy voodoo stuff, but I think it kind of came at a time when I needed it.
Yeah.
It would have been nicer to be, you know, a little further away from the edge of death, but, you know, maybe that's how it had to happen. Because, you know, I started initially researching ski lacerations. I started looking into just the mechanics, the physics of these accidents, and, you know, the possible solutions to them. And so by the time that you had your accident, again, long story short, I'm kind of trying to condense several months into this, but I'd spent a few months in my garage with a welder that I bought for off Craigslist in the US. And I was making, I think, 22 different machines for testing fabrics, so on and so forth. And until I could finally develop, along with a few other people and companies, a fabric that I thought was perfect for the use of ski racing in particular. So, and I can get more into specifics of this later, but I actually contacted you because, I mean, I wanted to, I knew the feeling. I knew what it felt like, at least for me, to kind of be on snow and have this sort of confidence taken away from me.
Yeah.
And I kind of embarked on this mission to make these leggings in order to regain that confidence myself. I didn't realize, I mean, that it wasn't something that was stuck on your mind as much as it was on mine, but I kind of wanted to extend that to you, so I reached out to you to send you a pair of the leggings that I made. I think I only made like 10 or so at that point, because I was kind of just trying to make them for, you know, myself, friends, family. Didn't think it would be any bigger than that. But I sent you a pair, and I've been very lucky to have you as a confidant, I guess, to sort of bounce ideas off of, get your feedback to develop them. And you're telling me you've been wearing them ever since?
Yeah, sadly it arrived like just at the beginning of Corona, so we didn't ski anymore after
right,
that.
Right.
So like I just wore them at home one time to see how they were fitting. I was like, ah, it's, size is good, I told you, and they feel comfortable, but I will have to see on skis how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the first camp, I straight away tried it, and like once I was wearing them, I didn't feel that they were on me. And that was sometimes a problem, because we've tried, for example, Cut's problem were in my mind in parallel races, because yes. I always was afraid of the opponent
mm-hmm.
coming, falling, and cutting me. You know, for example, if he falls 3 meters from you and suddenly he arrives with sharp edges and he just ski on you.
And that's happened, yeah.
That has happened, but never with a big accident. And that was actually the only time where I was thinking about that problem. And once you reached out to me, it kind of opened my eyes that it happens more than we think. It can be worse than we think. And so this summer I decided to wear it most of the time. Mm. I had a few days without. But all the way now it's just one more protection. And it doesn't annoy me. I don't feel it. It's comfy leggings. So I just wear it between my race suit and my ski underwears. And I know that I'm protected there.
Yeah.
And actually it's... Yeah, now I've talked about it to my teammates and so, because I tried also to make some other people aware of it, of the mm-hmm. problem.
Yeah.
And I think cutting myself in powder made more real persons realize how fast it can happen than if it was by ski racing, I think.
Mm.
Because we have less edges, we're slower. You think powder, deep, fresh snow, nothing should happen to you, you know?
Yeah.
You feel Superman when you're skiing powder.
Yeah.
You feel like you're unbeatable. You can do whatever you want. You can fall. You can... But actually not.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I mean,
that's the feeling you have when you do powder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can fall on anything apart from trees, of course, but you'll be fine.
Yeah. And so many people also in other teams, they were like, huh, that's how fast it can happen.
Mm.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, in ski racing, we have way more edges. Oof. And so on. And so some people started to be a bit aware of it. And many I know that are searching leggings and stuff on ticket protections. And so I'm happy actually that you're here to develop the brand and to also show everyone a little bit your research, because I find it also interesting.
Mm.
Like I'm interested as a person into the whole process behind.
Yeah.
And like I bothered you yesterday for 1.5 hour at coffee
mm-hmm.
to know everything about your testing, which materials, how you did that and that and why. So, and you were kind enough to explain me everything, and I find it super interesting actually.
I mean, I'm absolutely honored that you've, you know, took the time out of your day with all the photography, the videography, these podcasts you're doing, the ski racing, of course. I mean, I really don't know how you do it, but this is getting a little off topic, but I appreciate that you've got all these curiosities outside of ski racing. We can talk about that another time, but I think it's, I'm glad that you're interested in this. It's a very nuanced topic. There are a lot of details that don't really come to mind easily
mm-hmm.
when approaching it. And it's not, I mean, I don't really expect, if it hadn't happened to me, I probably wouldn't have listened to someone talking about this for 10 minutes without my eyes kind of glazing over, especially before this kind of became a big deal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand where people are coming from on this topic. But I mean, I think it is pretty important to address because, I mentioned this to you earlier, I think, but I think from what I've found statistically speaking, there are four main injuries that, ski racers experience. You know, there are obviously concussions, obviously the, torn ligaments, especially ACLs, broken bones, and ski lacerations. So, which happen to be a lot more, frequent than people realize, as we've alluded to. I told you there was a study in late 1970s in Vail where they actually found that I think during like a 6-year period, almost 10% of all injuries were due
on the whole ski resort, not ski racing.
Of the whole ski resort, not just racing, exactly. I mean recreational and otherwise, were attributed to ski lacerations, which, you know, blew my mind. It was one of the first, one of the few pieces of any sort of data that I found on the topic. But, you know, concussions we can't really prevent. We've got helmets to help. Doesn't help all the way. ACLs, you're not doing anything about. Same with broken bones. I mean...
You can prepare yourself physically.
Of course.
Can be ready to, I would say, lower your risk.
Mm-hmm.
But you can never take it away.
Certainly. I mean, you can do preparatory exercises for the season.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's no, I guess, quick equipment solution to that risk. When it comes to the issue of ski lacerations, I just think it's kind of a no-brainer, especially since it is the most lethal of any of these accidents. And I have to say, I mean, nothing's really cut-proof. You know, there comes a point where...
It will go through, like
it
everything.
It will go through. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you use a sharp enough ski with enough force at enough speed and, you know, anything will be penetrated. But, I mean, at the very, very, very least, you mitigate the risk associated with it. I mean, I told you this, but if I was wearing two more pairs of normal wool leggings on the day of my accident, I'm sure that would have helped too. I mean, anything helps. But I sort of kind of devoted myself to creating a solution for myself that helped me regain confidence with basically with without setting any sort of limitations. So I didn't care what the costs were. I didn't care how much time it took me to do it. I just wanted to make the best possible protection for myself that I could really trust in to help me get back on skis again. So I dedicated, you know, months and months to basically living in this garage in the middle of Brooklyn, welding together these machines. I tested over 200 different fabrics on more than 22 different machines based on the material content, the yarn composition and whatnot, sort of compiled the best results, as it were. And what I found, again, this is a long topic in and of itself, but the testing that's currently used, it it's not quite enough for what we need in ski racing.
Yeah, it's different.
It's different. It's not bad. It's just not testing the same sort of things that we're looking at. Yeah. So most of these cut resistant materials are actually made for either construction or fabrication with glass, metalworking, stuff like that. So one of the tests basically uses a glorified pizza cutter. So with a sharpened circular blade that kind of runs back and forth with, I believe it's 500 grams of force. And the other one uses, you know, a few more kilograms of force, but the blade runs over a distance of 20 millimeters, I believe, and at very, very slow speeds. Yeah. I think it's half the speed of a garden snail when I looked into it. So obviously you're not really comparing that to ski racing. Plus, these blades are super acute. I mean, that alone, these blades aren't 87 degrees or 86 or whatever you use. Yeah. That alone, I mean, completely changes the mechanics of these cut injuries. So I devoted most of my time to finding... the testing methods that would actually apply to our sport, because you can't really determine what works or what doesn't without having a way to compare them against each other. So based on that, again, I don't want this to kind of turn into an advertisement for what I'm doing. That's something I've really had to kind of contend with. You know, on one hand, I want to get these out there, and on the other hand, I don't want this to be too self-serving of a pursuit. To any degree, I tested these materials, compiled the data, worked with a few companies to develop the best yarns and the best fabrics, came up with one that I'm very, very happy with. And again, I use these means that are way more expensive than any other company. I'm just, you know, a crazy young guy working with one other guy from Poland now. But, you know, with these other companies, I mean, it just doesn't make sense for them to pursue something along these lines, because these materials in and of themselves are so expensive.
Yeah.
And to produce... products, I mean, it's extremely expensive as well. So, I mean, with the margins that you see in ski racing, it just doesn't make sense for any companies to pursue it. Or if they do pursue it, you know, you go to China, you go to Vietnam, buy a big old roll of the first cut-resistant fabric you find, slap it on a pair of normal leggings, and, you know, call it a day.
Yeah.
Call it cut-resistant protection.
But that wasn't enough for you.
No, I'm not quite enough. And I will say again, anything is better than nothing.
Yeah.
But for myself, I wanted to make sure I don't get cut again. So I developed with this company that I'm working with this yarn, and we turned into a fabric that is, I think it's the only cut level 5 certified fabric out there. Again, not that really matters because the tests aren't appropriate, but it just so happens to be level 5.
So
by accident.
Would you say you're perfectly happy with the quality of the material that you have now? Or do you still have room for progress?
I will never be happy with anything.
Okay.
I think that's just who I am as a person, more so than what I've done or haven't done. But, I mean, the technology is advancing so much.
Yeah. It changes all the time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's so quick, the rate of improvement. But, you know, the best stuff will always be extremely expensive. So while I'd like to make it way, way, way less costly than it currently is, I mean, I hope to adapt with the technology and, I mean, as much as it sucks from a business perspective, keep costs high to ensure that, you know, there are no compromises involved.
Yeah.
Make the best stuff out there. Instead of, you know, the normal way to make leggings is buy, again, a roll of fabric, cut it out,
yeah,
and, you know, sew that flat fabric together. So because of the cut resistance of this fabric, we actually have to basically... I kind of explain this
to you. You explain it like print it the form that you already need it.
Yeah, basically. Kinda. So create like a two-dimensional kind of size and shape,
yeah,
of these panels of leggings, and only then sew it together, which is, I mean, stupidly expensive. Nobody,
yeah, because each piece is one process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then there's the manual labor involved in actually, you know, just putting all that, yeah, together. So it doesn't make sense, but I don't think anything about this makes sense. I mean, the way that people are approaching this doesn't make sense. So why should the way that I'm trying to solve it?
Exactly.
So the two main things that I was going for was have the most protective fabric in and of itself that I possibly can, and ensure comprehensive protection. So, again, won't be a dead horse, but, a lot of stuff out there currently has these like patches of, yeah, protection. And it's important to keep in mind that it's not just the cut resistance of the fabric that matters. These fabrics are engineered to be really slippery to a blade. So instead of focusing the force in one spot, they kind of slide along it. And if you've only got a patch of fabric, you know, it usually ends in parts where you need range of movement, yeah, motion.
Like on your knees or...
Yeah, back of knees, inside of the groin. And those happen to be the most, you know, dangerous spots to get cut. Back of the knee, you get cut there. There are a lot of major blood vessels.
And no fats to take away.
No fat to take away. Absolutely. I was thankful to have a decent bit of fat on my leg at the time. And more muscle than I definitely have now. But it's really important to have as comprehensive protection as you possibly can. In the beginning, I was recommending Energiporos pants. They're hard to find. They're not entirely comfortable, which is another thing. I mean, if it's not comfortable, as you found out...
You don't want to wear it.
You're not going to wear it.
That's how it is.
Especially at your level. I mean...
Yeah. If you live every day on your skis, you want to be comfortable in what you have.
Yeah. And you told me you tried
I tried Swiss ski. I tried other fabrics, and
yeah,
it was never comfortable. And yours actually does... just feels like normal stuff on you.
I'm glad
like
to hear
nothing
that.
Else.
I mean, I'll keep working on it.
And actually, what I find interesting is that we're talking about athletes, but it's not necessarily made only for athletes. It's made for everyone.
Mm.
Everyone going to ski on a, I don't know, weekly basis,
mm-hmm,
can have that accident happen to them.
Absolutely.
So is it also your goal to not give it only to athletes, but also that everyone can use it? Or do you mostly have competition behind your mind because you come from that background?
One of the things I really, really suck at is focus. So when I thought of like cut resistant fabrics, I mean, I immediately thought to all the different applications. You've got ski racing, obviously. You've got recreational skiing. But beyond that, you've got hockey, skating, law enforcement, military, right, applications. You've got a ton of use for this. But I wanna practice the thing I'm bad at and actually focus on this one thing. I feel like if I can make something that's good enough for Loic Maillard, I mean, why can't it be good enough for Viktor Wojciech, you know? And, you know, it'll kind of trickle down is my hope because I don't think I told you this either, but the very first day that I was back on snow after my accident, this was, I think, Christmas Eve. Yeah, Christmas Eve. So sounds about right. 10 months to get back on snow. And that very day, at the end of the day, one of my ski patrollers came down, who I was supposed to be meeting with, and he told me, "Oh, sorry, Vic, I had a really long day. We were just taking care of this like 60-year-old man who cut his ass really badly in the middle of the woods, and they had to, you know, tourniquet him up as best they could. Yeah. Luckily, he was fine, but I mean, kind of an ominous sign, don't you think? My very first day back on snow.
It is definitely almost." I don't know how to explain it, actually.
It's weird. There are a lot
exactly.
of things that don't
exactly.
quite make sense, but, I mean, what are you going
to do? I think we could talk about it for way more hours, because there's so much about it to say and to discover, actually.
Mm.
And I hope that people are slowly understanding that it's a risk. And actually, I think they can pre-order your leggings now online, if I'm not wrong.
Absolutely. I'm I'm figuring everything out.
Slowly getting there. Slowly getting there.
Oh, it is available for pre-order on vixprotection.com. Like I said, figuring it all out. But I will also say what I've always said is any protection is better than no protection at all. So, since it cost me so much to create what I'm creating, it's going to be pretty expensive. I don't expect that it's going to be pocket change for anybody. But any protection that people can get,
An investment that you can keep for many years. You can ski with it 10 years. Mm. You can wash it.
Right.
You can wear it every day. You know it's going to protect you.
Yeah.
So actually, I feel like it's an investment to make sure that you have a future.
Yeah.
And that's what's important as well, to not... I'm that kind of person that doesn't always look at, okay, it costs that much. Mm. I'm more like, what can it bring me? What do I get for that price?
Yeah.
And then I feel like you get a piece that you can keep for many years and that you can use and reuse and that it's for your health.
Yeah.
And that's what's most important.
At
the end of the day,
it's
health.
I'm obviously biased, but I totally agree.
Yeah.
Again, I told you, I'm still trying to figure out this kind of moral quandary that I have within myself between, I obviously believe in what I'm doing. I think it's really worthwhile. I have this trouble kind of with, I worry that it's too self-serving of a pursuit, but I'm trying to figure out how to mitigate those. I mean, obviously there's this, what I think is a good mission, protecting people.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that you like it. And to your point, I mean, you can look at how many Swiss cappuccinos could I buy with this $350, or you could buy, you could think of, what kind of value do I get for my ski career, my health.
Exactly.
I'm on the same page. I'm just kind of more hesitant to say it. So I appreciate that you will.
Sometimes you just have to be real, actually, to look at the reality.
Yeah.
And I feel like as much as I want to succeed, and as much as I think every athlete wants to succeed, at the end of the day, we all want to have a life after 35.
Yeah, or a life.
Exactly. a life in general. And so, I mean, for that, it has no price, in my opinion. Or health, or the body of everyone has no price, because it's something that we only have once.
Bro, you can't be my salesman, man. That's pretty good. Did you prepare that? I completely agree. You said it better than I ever could.
It's just,
yeah.
So yeah, I think big thank you for coming here.
I mean, huge thank you for even responding to me in the first place.
I'm happy you're enjoying the Alps and Sassfe.
It's
pretty
beautiful.
Nice. You're lucky with the weather, so it's a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think don't forget to check out his website, vixprotection.com.
Correct. vixprotection.com.
Exactly. And hopefully everyone enjoyed it and nobody will be too scared to go ski actually next winter. It's not the goal.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Luke. Seriously,
thank you.
Tell you how much I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.